Okay, guys, you ready? Harold, you ready?
Alright. Okay. So our topic for tonight is half an independent topic. It's also half a bit of a prelude to what I'm going to speak about Shal Shittis here on Shabbos. So if you're around, so then you get to hear part two. I know, right? But I should really do is I should make Shal Shittis part one of what we're going to do here, and then right. But I'll give you a bit of an introduction to what I'm going to speak about then. So our topic for tonight is the question of Yeharik Vayavor, question of Kiddush Hashem and martyrdom. And we'll see that it touches on some very, very fundamental questions about when you're able to sacrifice your life for the system of halacha and for mitzvos, and when you're not allowed to, and when you may have the possibility, the choice, to volunteer your life. Okay, so you run from, sometimes you have an obligation to, you have a chiv of Yeharik Vayavor, you have a chiv when you're confronted with either your life or a mitzvah, you have an obligation to give up your life, to some more gray areas where you may have the choice. And there are some areas where it seems like it's totally forbidden. Okay? Now, in the background of this discussion is a pasuk in the Torah, in Bereishis. The Torah says, Aches dimchem lenafsho seichem edrosh, that if you take your own life, I'm going to hold you liable for it. Meaning, taking your own life is a form of murder according to the Torah. So that's why implicit in any of this discussion is that you don't have the right to just say, oh, here's a mitzvah, and I'm willing to give up my life for this mitzvah. Because halachically, that's considered murder. What? Okay, so let's see. So that's the background. That's going to be looming in the background of our discussion. So our discussion begins with the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph, top of the page. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yehotzadak, Nimnu Vigamru Ba'aliyas Beis Nitze B'Lud. So there are a bunch of rabbis in the attic of this house in Lud, in Eretz Yisrael, near the airport. Kol Averos Shebetorah, any of the Averos in the Torah, Im Omrim La'adam Avor Va'al Teharig, if someone, let's say, puts a gun to your head and says, either violate this Avera, or I'll kill you. So the din is Yavor Va'al Yeharig. You have to transgress the Avera, and here there's an ambiguity in translation. Either Va'al Yeharig can be translated as you are not allowed to be killed. Right? It's Va'al Yeharig, do not be killed. Or Va'al Yeharig means you don't have to be killed. I mean, it's not clear what this Gemara is telling us. It's inherently ambiguous. Does it mean you're not allowed to give up your life? Or does it mean that you don't have to give up your life? Chutz me'avodah zarah v'gili arayos v'shvichas damim. Except for...
Yavor is an imperative.
Right, so it's not clear. Yavor as an imperative, you have to. Or Yavor, you have the ability to transgress the Avera. That's the question. You think it's an imperative? We'll see the Rishonim who might think otherwise. Okay. Chutz me'avodah zarah gili arayos v'shvichas damim. There are three exceptions. There are three cases when you have to give up your life. One of them is avodah zarah, worshipping idols, gili arayos, illicit relations, v'shvichas damim, a case of murder. Okay. The Gemara goes on. The Gemara has a famous drasha of v'ahavta as Hashem elokecha, you should love Hashem your God, even if he's taking away your life, you have to be willing to sacrifice your life for the mitzvahs. Okay. That's the Gemara. The Gemara goes on to say, how do you know that you're supposed to give up your life for murder? So that's logical. Mi yemar dedama didach sumak tve. Guy puts a gun to your head and he says, either kill your friend or I'll kill you. So the Torah says, you don't have the right to decide whose life is more precious. So therefore, you have an obligation to be killed and not take the initiative and kill your friend. Gili arayos is based off a connection in the Gemara, in the Torah between Ritzicha and arayos. So we just apply the concept that we have from murder to the case of Erev. That's the background. Now the Gemara, only these three Averos warrant that you're supposed to give up your life.
Avodah Zarah under compulsion is a difficult one,
no? Under compulsion? Yeah. Well, all these cases...
Somebody puts a gun to your head and says, bow down to this idol. See, you bow down. You're not bowing down because you believe in the idol. You're bowing down because you've got a gun to your head.
Okay.
There's no act of murder. The other, it's not the same as the other two.
Okay, so let's see that case in a second. Okay, I think that touches on a more fundamental question here, because you're asking, you're coerced, right? So don't we have a general coercion? Don't we have a general exemption for cases of coercion? So we'll see that case in a second.
There's nothing. If there's an idol that's worshipped by throwing pebbles at it, which we know there is, okay, and somebody, and then you bow down to the idol and genuflect. Right?
All right.
So therefore, you know, did you commit avodah zarah or not? Because is it only in your mind that you did, or does it?
Okay, I'm gonna bring up one of those cases. I'm gonna bring up those cases. The Gemara, the Mishnayos on Avodah Zarah are very liberal with their definition of Avodah Zarah. They're very liberal with the definition of Avodah Zarah. Even if you don't have intention, the Mishnah goes so far as to say, even iskavin levazoso, even if you have intention to mock the Avodah Zarah, right, some Avodah Zarahs are worshipped by defecation. Right, so you have intention to be mocking it. The Gemara says, nonetheless, that's considered Avodah Zarah, and you're a Chayiv Misa. You could be killed for that.
It has to be worshipped in the same manner.
In the same manner that it...
Right. If it is worshipped that way.
If you go to Malkior and you do that,
right.
Because you're saying this is a Bizayon...
Regardless of your intention, though.
Right. So, but being that Malkior is worshipped in the way that...
He is.
Therefore, it's Avodah Zarah.
Correct.
If you've meant it to that.
Correct. So let me get to the specific cases. Okay. Now, there are some other cases of Yaharik Val-Yavor that are in addition to these big three Averos. That's the next source, the Gemara in Ayin Dalet Amid Aleph, in the middle of the page. Ki asa Rav Dimi Yom Rav Yochanan, when Rav Dimi joined this discussion, he said, Lo shanu ela shelo b'shas hashmad. This is only true when it's not a time of persecution. Meaning, if the Jews are being persecuted by some foreign nation, so then, aval b'shas hashmad, afilu mitzvah kala Yaharik Val-Yavor. Then even the slightest, the most lenient of mitzvos warrants Yaharik Val-Yavor, that you should be killed rather than violate that Avera. Okay, that's something called Shas HaShmat. Time of persecution, any mitzvah warrants killing your life, giving up your life. Then the Gemara goes on, Ki asa Rav and Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Afilu shelo b'shas HaShmat, lo amru ela b'tzina, aval b'farhesi, afilu mitzvah kal Yaharik Val-Yavor. Not only is this true for Shas HaShmat, even under normal circumstances, if it's a public affair, a non-Jew says in front of 10 Jews, he says, violate, bow down to Avodah Zarah or I'll kill you. Sorry, not Avodah Zarah. He says, violate some Avera or I'll kill you. So then the Gemara says you have to give up your life in that circumstance. Okay, so either it's the big three, or it's a time of persecution, or it's something that's done in public. Good. The Gemara then goes on, bottom of page one, second to last source. The Gemara wants to know, what about non-Jews? What about Gentiles? Are Gentiles obligated to give up their life al Kiddush Hashem or not? So Boim Yineim Rav Merebi Ami, they asked Rabbi Ami this question, Ben Noach Mitzuvah Kedushas Hashem, O Ein Mitzuvah Kedushas Hashem. Is a Gentile commanded to give up his life on Kedushas Hashem? Amar Abaye, Toshma, Sheva Mitzvos Nitzavu B'nei Noach. Right? Aren't there only seven Mitzvos of B'nei Noach? None of them, right? Kiddush Hashem is not included in the seven. Ve'im Yisa T'man Yohaven. And if there were also Kiddush Hashem, then there would be eight Mitzvos of B'nei Noach. So the Gemara says, no, very interesting response. Amar Le Rava, no. Inhu v'chol abizrayu. Had non-Jews have been commanded in Kiddush Hashem, it wouldn't have been a separate mitzvah. It would have been a component of each one of those seven mitzvos. So let's say non-Jews are commanded on murder. Part of their commandment of murder is that they have to give up their life rather than murder somebody. Part of their commandment not to worship Avodah Zarah is that they have to be willing to give up their life on it. Okay? Very fascinating question.
What? What about the other
mitzvot? For non-Jews? All yeah. Seven. Each one of those seven mitzvot...
to establish a justice system or something.
Right, and if they don't establish a justice system, they have to be willing to give up their lives. That's what the Rambam writes. I think it's the Rambam. That's why the children of... That's why Shimon and Levi killed Shechem. Right. Because they were obligated... They're obligated in Misa because they should have set up a justice system to persecute people, and they didn't. Therefore, they're Chayiv Misa.
I guess their father didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay? That's what the Ramban asks. He says, why was Yaakov upset with them then? Okay. So that's the fundamental question. Now, just to put it in perspective, Tosos in Sanhedrin Ayin Dalet Amud Beis poses this question. You want to suggest that non-Jews are obligated in Kiddush Hashem to give up their lives? Ben Noach Mitzuvah Kiddush Hashem. V'im Tomar, and if you'll ask, V'ha V'chai Behem B'Yisrael K'siv. Really, in principle, every mitzvah, any one of the 613 mitzvahs, should obligate you to give up your life, except that the Torah also says, v'chai behem. The Torah says that you should live by these precepts, and therefore it can't be that you have to give up your life every time, right? Because then we'd be dying instead of living by the mitzvahs. So Tosafot says, but that's only written by Yisrael. That's not written by non-Jews. So shouldn't it be obvious, simply by the lack of this special concept of v'chai behem applying to non-Jews, that a non-Jew is obligated to give up his life for any mitzvah? It's a very interesting assumption. That means, in principle, any mitzvah warrants Kiddush Hashem. What?
It's bizarre to me, because they
non-Jews. So let's see what Tosas, but that's not what Tosas even answers. Well, I think it's bizarre for the opposite reason. It's bizarre that it's intriguing that every mitzvah inherently warrants Kiddush Hashem, and it's only because the Torah also tells us v'chai b'hem that we don't have to. Right? You're saying that non-Jews shouldn't be held to the same standard that Jews are held to.
Saying they have a different operating system.
Right, but this is assuming that they're believing in the same God we are. Mm-hmm. And that's the assumption of the seven mitzvahs of Bnei Noach. Okay. So Tosas answers, v'yesh lomar, second line, d'dilma lo etzdarach v'chai b'hem, it's not true, Tosas is just rejecting the assumption that I laid out. It's not true that every mitzvah has the capacity for Kiddush Hashem. The Chai Behem is simply blocking what you may have generalized from the big three Averos. You may have said that the big three set a precedent to be expanded to the rest of the 613. So the Chai Behem tells you that only these three. Okay, but never was there a thought that every mitzvah in principle could be subject to Kiddush Hashem. Okay, that's the background. Now there is an important question here. This is a little bit of what Dr. Cook was pointing out. But what constitutes actual Avodah Zarah? Okay, so in its most extreme form, take a look at the Rush on the top of page 2. Very, very fascinating Rush in Avodah Zarah. Okay. End of the first line. Ein ledakteik mikan. Don't infer from here, Sheyehe muter liYisrael lomar obed kochavim hu, kedei shelo yaharguhu. Right? Don't infer that it's permissible for a Jew to disguise himself and say that I am a Christian or I am an idol worshiper, an idolator. Kedei shelo yaharguhu, to prevent them from killing him. Meaning, the Rush thinks it's prohibited for a Jew to disguise himself as a non-Jew, saying that I am an obed kochavim. Why? Devadai kofer beikerhu. That is denying a basic Jewish premise. Dekivin shirotzim lahargo im lo yapoch lidasam, since they want to kill him if he doesn't convert to their religion. V'yia ove kochavim kemosam. Or if he becomes, and since they want him to become an idolater like them. Vadai kisha omer ove kochavim hu, when he says, I am an idolater or a Christian or whatever. Hode lidatam, he's admitting to their religion. V'kibel alav eloha shelahen. And that's an implicit acceptance of their God. Right? So the Rush goes so far here as to say that simply the statement that I am of religion X or religion Y, that constitutes Avodah Zarah. Right?
When it says Obey Kochavim, is that a synonym of Avodah Zarah?
Yeah. I am an idolater. People who worship stars, literally. Now what's fascinating here is that he's not Avodah Zarah here without any act. Exactly. So that's from the Mishnah and Avodah Zarah, that Avodah Zarah could be defined not as bowing down, you don't need an action, but Kabbalas Elohus, accepting the yoke of that religion is considered Avodah Zarah. So that's the question in all the Islamic lands when you had the Almohads or these other Islamic fanatic groups that came through and tried to convert the Jews. So they wanted the Jews just to recite the Shahada, saying that I believe in Muhammad as the prophet. So the question is that statement, there was no actual Avodah Zarah, right? They believe in a monotheistic God. But is the statement itself considered Avodah Zarah, just accepting that religion? Okay, that was the question. Okay. Well, sorry, I'm saying even if there's no act of Avodah Zarah, there's no bowing down.
I think it's a weird question because nobody holds Islam as Avodah Zarah.
Okay, so the Ritva in the next source will suggest that Islam is considered Avodah Zarah.
Against the Rambam.
Against the Rambam. Seemingly against the Rambam. The Rambam contradicts himself. The Rambam has one letter where he writes there was this ger, convert, Rabbi Ovadya Hager, where people are making fun of the poor guy. They're mocking his Jewish credentials. So the Rambam writes back, he's like, you know, I can't believe they're making fun of you, and they called you that you were an idolater. Like, after all, you were a Muslim before you were Jew, and everybody knows that Islam is monotheistic, like Judaism, and so even when you were Gentile, you were, you know, just as good as we Jews are. That's what the Rambam writes in his letter to Ovadya Hager. In Igeres Hashmad, which is a letter that the Rambam sent to the Taimani lands, so the Rambam there writes, they were also tried to be converted to Islam. So the Rambam writes that you cannot recite the Shahada, you can't say, I accept Muhammad as the prophet, and that you really have an obligation to give up your life rather than say that. The problem is, if the Rambam holds that Islam is not Avodah Zarah, how does that ever justify giving up your life?
If the Sultan censored the first thing, he didn't censor the second.
Ah, okay. That's the academic answer, maybe. So that's a tricky question. If you look at the Ritva here, well... Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty tough. I mean, look, the Rambam's, it's also a tricky answer. The Rambam can't say, okay, you all could accept Islam. That would be disastrous. You know, you'll have what you had in Spain in the 14th and 15th century. Right? So I'm trying to say you have to maintain, you can't accept Islam. So the Rambam's not going to say, oh, don't worry, it's not a Avodah Zarah, because he has to protect this community. Okay. But either, if you take a look at the Ritva and Psachim on Chaf Heim Beis, our next source, the Kasav Od Zal, the Ritva further wrote, V'havi yodea she'emunas ha'yishme'ilim, the faith of Islam, afal pi shehem yachdim es Hashem, right, even though they believe in a single unified God, Avodah Zarah gemura chashiva leharig val yishtamed. It's considered full Avodah Zarah with respect to the halacha that you have to give up your life rather than convert. Why? Shaharei hamode be'emunasam, somebody who believes in their faith, kofer b'toras Moshe she'enu emes k'moshe hi b'yadenu. When you accept Muhammad as the prophet, you're implicitly denying the veracity of Torah shebichsav. Because you're saying that there is a prophet who superseded Nevuas Moshe, the prophecy of Moshe. So that's fascinating. Right? The Ritva here is willing to redefine Avodah Zarah. Generally, Avodah Zarah is about your belief in the deity. Here, the Ritva thinks that even just denying one of the main tenets of Judaism is considered Avodah Zarah. That's a very novel point in...
With sincerity, though. I mean, he's talking about somebody who sincerely adopts that view, not under compulsion.
No, I think sincerity, as you saw in the Rush already, right? The Rush thinks even pretending to accept their religion by saying, I am an idolater, is Avodah Zarah.
Okay.
Right?
So
he has a big chiddush in defining Islam as Avodah Zarah. Okay? I say this only to give, I give you both of these, the Rush and the Ritva, to say that the definition of Avodah Zarah itself is very tricky.
But he's positing it as it's Avodah Zarah because you are sincerely...
No, because the religion of Islam denies some of the fundamental tenets of Jewish faith. So both the Ritva and the Rush have very novel interpretations of Avodah Zarah. The Ritva in how liberal he is in applying Avodah Zarah to monotheistic religions, and the Rush in how liberal he is in defining Avodah Zarah not as an action, but even just merely reciting, not sincerely, insincerely, reciting that I am of this religion. Okay, so both of them have a broader interpretation of Avodah Zarah. Okay. Now, when we talk about these three Averos being Yeharig Vayavar, okay, so what's the rationale? Why do these three Averos require that you give up your life, whereas no other in the mitzvah in the Torah does? What's unique about these three Averos? If you had to point to something as to why they're unique, what would you do?
One is the complete denial of Anochi Hashem Elokecha.
Murder?
What?
Murder?
Well,
yes.
No, I said one of them.
Okay, one of them.
We'll get to the others in a second.
All right.
I mean, that's Avodah Zarah is basically the denial of the essential element of the Ten Commandments.
Okay.
Killing is the classic answer, because I did this with my granddaughter the other day. My blood's no redder than your blood, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that, to me, that's obvious to some extent, although you might want to argue there's a 100-year-old guy, and I'm 22 years old, and he's going to die of cancer next week. Maybe I should kill him to stay alive if I'm 22 years old healthy, but... The end result is my blood's no redder than your blood's no redder than mine. Okay. My blood's no redder than yours.
Is there a unified theme then?
We've got to get to that in a second. Yes. Lo Ya'aretz is really maybe such a destruction of the family structure. If you do that it's really it's just an untenable position to take that you could do something like that. So
good.
So what's the unifying structure?
Is there a unified theme as to why these three are different? How do you, if you had to explain, just like as a category, why these are different? How do you do so?
I don't know.
Somebody asked you why in your religion.
Different, but they're. I guess they're just.
Well, murder.
One of them. You're acting like. You can't go back.
All right.
You can.
Okay. Fair.
The three are very destabilizing to sort of society.
Right.
At an extreme level.
Okay. That's good.
In terms of murder and murderdom, you're taking upon yourself the role of God. You're deciding when somebody's going to die, which is in effect.
In part, but only because you're kind of in this sticky situation, right?
When you say murder in general, not murder.
Well, this is a case.
How does murder relate to?
But this is a case where you're acting under coercion.
I thought you asked the question correctly. What's the correlation between all three of these things
right.
that they should make you higher to give up your life?
Right.
Not.
But chayav to give up your life, even in a case where you're
pretending.
You're under anus. You're forced.
But that's the whole.
It's a basis of life in society.
Okay, so you're right.
And that's
you're in agreement with your neighbor behind you.
Factor in all of them.
Right.
I mean, if you're denying Hashem,
denying
Hashem.
You're
everything,
denying
the Torah, everything. If a Galuya Arayot. You're destroying the whole family, the society, and the family structure.
Could be.
And
I hear. I would only point out that there's this very interesting sheet of Tosos that this doesn't apply to women, at least the Gilead Arayos one. Right. So it's hard to say that it's purely about it doesn't apply to women. Meaning a woman is not obligated to give up her life. The Gemara points to Esther.
Yeah.
Right. Why was Esther allowed to marry Achashverosh? Right, she was married, according to the Medrash, to Mordechai. So the Gemara asks about Esther, but only on the grounds that it was a public affair, because everyone knew about it. But why shouldn't it have been the Avera itself? Why shouldn't that have been Yehari Gval Yavar?
What's the Gilar Eris? She wasn't married. She was a single girl.
The Medrash says she was married to Mordechai. So according to that Medrash, you have a question.
I don't buy that Medrash one bit, so.
Something about being
that's probably the same one that says this Yitzchak was 3 years old.
Yes, so you're very consistent from last week.
I don't buy that one.
Right.
But there's something about being a co-fair towards God, which is,
not being a co-fair. If somebody puts a gun.
Right, but here you're not even sincere. It's just, it's nominal avodah zarah even. Now I could just argue that halacha doesn't care about nominal avodah zarah. Avodah zarah is avodah zarah, regardless of sincerity.
It's not avodah zarah.
Okay, so let's see. So I would just say, broadly speaking, the Rishonim fall into two camps in understanding why these three averos are different.
I don't know if I asked you this last week or I saw. Were there Muranos considered a vote as Zora?
You asked the last question.
Did we get an answer?
Same answer you got this
week. I think the assumption is that Christianity is a vote as... Oh, yeah, that would be considered a vote as Zora.
Even though they practice some Judaism during the...
Right. Right.
The kingdom of Israel was...
Look, the Rush here said that just saying that you're a Christian is a vote as Zora. We follow the Rush. I think the Shulchan Aruch paskins. I think Shulchan Aruch rules this, follows this ruling of the Rush. Okay, let me just give before I lose all the time here. So just two, the Rishonim fall into two broad camps, why these three are different. Either you could point to the severity of the Avera itself, that somehow these three Averos are more strict, they're more severe than any of the other 610 mitzvahs in the Torah. So that's why the severity of the mitzvah warrants that you have to give up your life. The Rambam falls into a different category. If you're familiar with the Rambam's codification, you don't like the Rambam when the Rambam's different? The Rambam falls into a different category. The Rambam in the fifth parak of Yesod HaTorah. So in Halacha Aleph, the Rambam writes the following, middle of the page. Kol Beis Yisrael Mitzuvin Al Kiddush Hashem HaGadol HaZeh. Everybody in the Jewish nation is commanded on the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. Shenemar V'nikdashti B'soch B'nei Yisrael. Sanctify my name amongst the Jews. U'muzharin Shalo L'chalulo. And in addition, they're commanded not to desecrate his name. Shenemar V'lo S'chalulu Hashem Kadshi. Ketzad. How does this play itself out? Kesheyamod ovei kochavim v'yanos es Yisrael lavar alachas mikol mitzvos hamuos b'Torah. When a non-Jew stands on top of you and tells you to violate one of the mitzvos that's written in the Torah, o yahargenu, or he'll kill you, yavor v'al yehareg. You should violate the mitzvah rather than give up your life. Shenemar b'mitzvos asher yasa osa adam v'chai behem. You should live by the mitzvos. You should live by them, you shouldn't die by them. And if you died and you didn't transgress the mitzvah for a normal mitzvah, so you're really liable for the death penalty. What's peculiar about this Rambam? This is the opening of the fifth parak. This is the Rambam's opening to Kiddush Hashem. So the first novelty here, fine, is that the Rambam thinks it's not about the severity of the mitzvah. It's about that these mitzvahs have greater Kiddush Hashem in them. So I might argue that, let's say, Avodah Zarah is just as severe as Chilul Shabbos. One's no more severe than the other. But there's more Chil Hashem involved in accepting another religion than being Mechal Shabbos. So it's about the impact of being Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, sanctifying God's name, not about the intrinsic severity of the Aver. That's just one point. You'll see other Rishonim think it's about the severity, the Rambam thinks it's about Kiddush Hashem. And the Rambam, in the end of the parak, you'll see, this is all in the fifth parak of Yesodei Torah, the Rambam talks about, like, you know, simple Kiddush Hashem. The Rambam says, what's Kiddush Hashem? It's when you have a person who does, you know, he has nice transactions with non-Jews. Person who behaves nicely on the street. That's Kiddush Hashem. All in the same chapter that he has this notion of giving up your life. So the other Rishonim wouldn't group those together. It's about the severity of the Aveira. Fine. That's the fundamental debate. What's puzzling about this Rambam here?
He doesn't speak about the three mitzvot, does he?
How does the Rambam open up the mitzvah, the chapter of Kiddush Hashem? What's the first case he gave us? What's the first case? It's a case where you're not supposed to give up your life. So Rambam says everyone's obligated in Kiddush Hashem. How is that true? When you're not supposed to give up your life for a mitzvah, you're not allowed to give up your life. That's Kiddush Hashem. And then later on, a couple of halachos later, the Rambam says, oh, and in, when it comes to these three averos, then you're obligated to give up your life. So it's inverted. The Rambam thinks that the paradigm of Kiddush Hashem is actually to not give up your life when you're not supposed to. That has the same legal force as cases of the, that's the same kind of a Kiddush Hashem as a case where you do give up your life when you are obligated to.
Does he translate his definition of Kiddush Hashem?
What do you mean? Well, it has certain applications. Giving up your life when you're supposed to, not giving up your life when you're not supposed to, and we'll see his cases of, like, oh, behaving nicely on the street.
Yeah, but a little bit more philosophically.
What Kiddush Hashem is?
Yeah.
No, I don't think he tells us what it is.
Don't be an extremist, is what he's saying.
Right. But one could have pointed to Kiddush Hashem. You would have thought that the ultimate Kiddush Hashem here is giving up your life for the mitzvah. The Rambam, in his very first halacha, inverts that. And he says, ultimate Kiddush Hashem is not giving up your life when you're not supposed to. Okay, it's a very fascinating introduction to the parak. Now, so those are just two understandings. Either it's the severity of the mitzvah, or it's just this notion of Kiddush and Chil Hashem. What's the important distinction? And this gets back to your question, Harold. What's going to be the important difference between those two perspectives? Let's say somebody goes ahead, and somebody is at gunpoint violates Avodah Zarah. So what's the din? Comes back home. What do we do? What do you do? It's not shit, it's ones. The guy put a gun to a Naju put a gun to his head, said bow down to Avodah Zarah. Yeah, let's say it's in public. Or even private. He has to give up his life.
You'd let him go along with his life.
You would let him go. Totally scot free. What's the punishment for Avodah Zarah in general? Misa. Bezin's supposed to kill him.
Not
Avodah Zarah. So you want to say there's a Ptur on us?
Right.
Okay. So the Rambam says, the Rambam agrees with you. There's an exemption for cases of coercion. Now, the Rambam says that explicitly in the bottom of page 2. The Rambam says, V'chol misha nemar bo yeharig val yavor, anybody who's supposed to give up his life, v'avar v'lo neharag, if he did not give up his life, hareza mechal as Hashem. He desecrated the name of Hashem. V'im haya ba'asara mi'Yisrael, if it was in front of 10 Jews, hareza chil as Hashem b'rabim. He desecrated Hashem's name publicly. U'bitel mitzvah saseh, and he also transgressed a positive commandment, shehi kiddush Hashem, which is the obligation to sanctify God's name. V'avar al mitzvah lo saseh, shehi chil Hashem, and he also violates a negative commandment, which is the commandment not to desecrate the Shem Hashem. And despite all this, mipnei she'avar be'ones, since he violated the avera under coercion, he was forced to ein malkin oso.
Nothing.
We don't give him lashes. Ve'ein sarich lomar she'ein mimisin oso. Bezdin. And of course, Bezdin's not going to punish him with the death penalty. Afilu harag be'ones. Even if he murdered somebody under coercion, we're not going to punish him. She'ein malkin umimisin ela lo'over bertzono uve'edim v'hasra. The only time we give lashes or death penalty is if a guy did it volitionally. Is this obvious, this ruling of the Rambam?
No.
Yes.
No.
Why no?
Because you're supposed to give up your life.
What's the point?
Precisely.
It's only under coercion.
Exactly. What?
It's only under coercion. The examples they give in the Shtrich HaSpom Gilead Royals is an Avodah Zarah. It's under coercion.
Ah.
If that's
Right. Put it.
If you
put,
knew that this was the outcome, bad. Why would you ever let yourself be killed?
Well, you're violating the mitzvah of Chilul Hashem and Kiddush Hashem, which is still a big deal.
This gets pretty extreme.
Why would the rules of the Eidim and Ashra be abrogated? Why would you think that?
Well, they're not. Well, because I might have said, and this is the legal dispute here, I might have said that the Torah, when the Torah obligates you to give up your life, essentially what's the Torah doing? The Torah is suspending the exemption of coercion. So for all the mitzvahs, for 610 mitzvahs, the Torah says if you do it under duress, you're exempt. The whole point of your obligation to die for these mitzvahs is that there is no exemption of coercion.
Right.
And that's why the Torah obligates you to give up your life.
I don't see why it's any different from committing intentional murder without an Eidim and Asra. You get away with it all.
But forget about the Eidim and Asra. Let's talk about the intent. Right, the intent on the act.
If you commit intentional murder, when do they punish you?
Well,
you murder someone.
Right.
Buy a gun, you take it to his house, you shoot him in the head. When can you be punished?
Well, first of all, I might counter by saying that this is intentional murder. Since the Torah obligates me to give up my life, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. Now, when I choose to murder this fellow Jew, that's a volitional act.
But my example, you can't be punished for either.
Why?
What's the punishment for murdering somebody?
Oh, let's say you have Eidim and Hasra.
Different example.
But let's say you have.
Oh, you mean at the...
Under the case of coercion. Guy puts a gun to your head. Right? He says, kill your friend or I'll kill you. Two Eidim stand there and say, you know the Torah tells you that you have to give up your life. If you shoot him, you're going to be Chayav Misa. And he says, I know that. And he pulls the trigger. So was that done under was that done volitionally or under coercion? The Rambam says, the Ptur Anus is in full effect. It's acting under duress.
On all three of these, he says that.
Yeah, on all three of these cases. Okay. Look at the Ramach, bottom of page 2, really.
I don't know how we can say that, because the Chai Bahem, maybe on two of the three we can say, the Chai Bahem, if that's his excuse that, you know, from the top part is that, you know, you're supposed to, the Chai Bahem overrules that part. I don't know how I understand how we can say taking somebody else's life is more valuable, less valuable than your life.
Bill, you would punish somebody who commits an act with a gun to his head, ever?
What?
When he's obligated to give up his life?
Would you punish somebody who commits an act with a gun to his head?
If the person says to X, you kill Y or you get killed,
yes.
I would say that person should say, kill me.
Right, and that's what he's obligated to do.
I wouldn't say that for Avodah Zarah. I might not say it for Gilui Arayos, because...
Right. But the Rambam doesn't discriminate.
Kill them.
Right. Rambam's been living in a time of fundamentalist fathers.
Right.
Also, and he had...
Sure.
Mishnah Torah, was in the... that he actually had escaped from them. So he had seen a lot of this coercion.
Right.
On the Jews.
Yeah, you'll see.
And
there's.
They actually bowed down to him.
Yeah, you'll see in a second that the Rambam very rarely do you have a personal flourish in Mishnah Torah. It's a very legal work. You'll see there's a personal flourish in a minute. It's not in some editions of the Rambam, but you'll see in a second. So, or I could go back to that. I actually skipped it, but we'll get back to it in a minute, maybe. Look at the Ramach, bottom of page 2, really top of page 3. The Ramach is a province. Is in Provence, southern Spain. He wrote. Emendations, or literally glosses, countering a lot of the Rambam's rulings within the first 100 years that the Rambam came out. Okay, so he's very early, and he's a very early critic of the Rambam. So top of page 3, T'mi'alon, I'm astonished at this ruling. Darminan b'masnisin, after all, we said in the Mishnah, ha'poer atzmo lepaor, someone who defecates to paor, which is how they used to worship Avodah Zarah, that kind of Avodah Zarah, zehu avodaso, that's the way they worshipped it, v'chayev misa. Umuki labi Gemara, and the Gemara explained, Afal gav de mechavin levezuye, even though he had intention to mock the Avodah Zarah. Okay? So he worshipped the Avodah Zarah, really intending to mock it. Vahu vadai mutehu. Shouldn't that be a case of a mistake? That's like a case of almost of coercion.
Almost.
It's muteh, was mistaken. He had intention to mock it, and since that's its Avodah Zarah, he's chayav misa. Look along. Afal pisha kibul alav hasra. The Savar Shahasra San Betel, even though he got Hasra, he thought the Hasra must not be true, the warning couldn't be true, because he's making fun of the Avodah Zarah. V'hachanami, and here too, v'afal pichein chayiv, and nonetheless, he's still obligated for worshipping it. V'hachanami, so too in our case. Im avar Avodah Zarah ba'ones, if he worships Avodah Zarah under coercion, v'hasruah, but they gave him Hasra, chayiv misa.
But it's not an onus.
He should be punished by death.
Not known as the one who
cares. Okay.
Bad analogy.
Okay, you would argue it's a bad analogy, but I would counter like Billy and like we were saying before, that when the Torah obligates you to give up your life, not choosing to do so is a volitional action. Okay, now, one might say that this dispute between the Rambam and the Ramach, whether or not you could still invoke the Ptur, this exemption of duress, is actually works out very nicely according to their perspectives of why you're supposed to give up your life. The Rambam says, it's not because of the inherent severity of the Avera, it's a separate obligation of Kiddush Hashem. Right. So the Torah says, you know what, now you have the opportunity to give up your life, and that's what you're obligated to do. But never because the crime itself is so egregious. The Ramach may hold that because it's the severity of the crime itself, therefore there's absolutely no way where you're allowed to take someone else's life. There's absolutely no way where you're allowed to do avodah zarah. So the Ramach will say that the notion, the exemption of duress, is suspended. The Rambam will say it's in full force because the whole obligation to give up your life is one externally imposed by the obligation of Kiddush Hashem.
It seems like Rambam will never have a case where he'll say Yarog v'yal yavor.
On the big three.
You ever have a case?
The big three.
The Rambam. I thought we just said he said you could kill somebody if he has a...
If you're supposed to give up your life, if you ended up taking the other guy's life, so you're not going to be punished by Bezdin.
That's what I'm saying.
But you had an obligation to give up your life. You're just not punished for not doing it.
Okay, so
that's the point. And the Rambam says it's still severe, you violate... Correct. Good. Now, there's a very fascinating side question here about what if... It's a question between torture and violating the Avera. I mean, everyone agrees that for these three Averos, you're supposed to give up your life. What about enduring torture? Okay, so here you have a very interesting Gemara in the Gemara in Ksuvis Lamed Gimel Mabez, top of page 3. Here the Gemara is trying to figure out whether death is worse or lashes is worse, which is a more severe punishment. Sometimes in Halacha you get lashes, sometimes you get the death punishment. So the Gemara says, Mimai demisa chamura, how do you know that death is worse? Dilma malkas chamur. Maybe lashes is more severe. Dama Rav. After all, Rav has the statement, Il mole nagdu l'chananya mishal v'azaria. Had Nebuchadnezzar have beat Hanani, Mishael, and Azaria, polchul tzalma. This is a story from Daniel. Hanani, Mishael, and Azaria throw themselves into the furnace rather than bow down to Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says, had they been tortured, they would have bowed down to the Avodah Zarah. Tosus is very bothered by this. So, what's the clear implication from the Gemara? Yeah, torture here justifies violating the Avera, even though death doesn't. That's the implication. So Tosfos here is bothered. Tosfos says, "Il mole nagdu l'chananya mishal v'azaria have a pachul etzalma tema." Doesn't make any sense. Minolan, how could the Gemara say this? The ha amrinon v'haroa. We see in the Gemara in Brachos, kishehotziu es Rabbi Akiva when the Romans pulled Rabbi Akiva out. Rabbi Akiva was teaching Torah in public. Amar kol yamai hayisi mitzdar al pasuk ze emas ayava liyadi v'akaymena. B'chol nafshchar, Rabbi Akiva was saying Shema, and he's like, when would I be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem? Alma mashma de v'chol nafshcha mayri. You see, the obligation is with all your soul. Afilu hayu miyasrin asa adam b'yisurin kashin. Even if they're going to persecute you with all sorts of hard torture. Dumya de Rabbi Akiva, like the story with Rabbi Akiva, who gave up his life, even though shehayu misarkin b'saro b'misarke barzel. The Gemara says they were combing his flesh with steel combs. They're torturing him. And yet he gave up his life. And yet he was willing to still teach Torah. The kol shekein linagude. So a fortiori, if Rabbi Akiva was willing to be tortured, so to get Malkus.
When we read that
Haruge Malkus.
Doesn't say that they had an option not to give up their life.
But he had the option not to teach Torah in public. That, Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara has a story.
They said you're going to get the punishment for selling Yosef, and they killed the 10 guys in the way.
Right, but the Gemara in Brachos tells the story that Rabbi Akiva was teaching Torah in public, even though the Romans decreed you weren't allowed to. Papas Ben Yehuda sees him and he says, Akiva, you're crazy. Why are you doing this? And he gives him the analogy of the fox, right?
Yeah.
Famous analogy of the fox, where the fox tries to convince the fish to come out of the water, and he says, the fish say, of course we have to stay in the water. And he says, that's why I still have to teach Torah. Right? He gives him that whole analogy. So he felt that he still had to teach.
I didn't think that was the reason they tortured him, but okay.
Yeah, that's the Gemara in Brachos. You can check it out. So the clear reading of the Gemara seems to be that that torture justifies giving up your life. Tosfos says that can't be. But now the question is, how does Tosfos read the Gemara? The Gemara says that had they have tortured Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, they would have bowed down to the Avodah Zarah.
Speculation.
Speculation, but how could they have? These are...
Nobody says that.
Depends on the individual.
But no, but these are, we held these, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, though, they're like heroes in Daniel, right? So what is Tosos' answer? Very interesting answer. Ve'omer Rabbeinu Tam, de'oso tzelem lo ha'yavodas kochavim amish. The little idol that Nebuchadnezzar had next to him wasn't really an Avodah Zarah. It was like something that he had of his own image. He wanted people to bow down to him. But it wasn't really Avodah Zarah, because if it was Avodah Zarah, there's no way in the world that Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah would have bowed down to it. Okay. What? Oh. We'll see that in a second.
Okay,
we'll see. That's a very important point. Okay? Everybody hear that? Meaning, if it wasn't Avodah Zarah,
yeah.
So the story says that they ended up giving up their life. So here you're caught between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, the Gemara says they would have bowed down to it. Tosa says not Avodah Zarah. Yeah. Right? On the other hand, they ended up giving up their life. So we'll see this in a second. Now, just look at the Chita Mekubetzes and Ksuvos on the bottom of page 3. The Chita Mekubetzes counters. He quotes all of Tosvos. Okay? Bottom of page 3. He quotes all of Tosvos. Last line. The lo nihira. I don't think this is correct. Dikra hachi ka'amar. Afilu hu notel es nafshecha uvichla... Sorry. Go to the top of the Shitim Kubetz. That's bottom of page 3, the beginning of the source. Uvichuntresen kasuv. Ilmole nagduhu v'chule. Pirish haraver b'Eliezer. Delo chayva Torah limsar asman lemisa. The Torah only obligates you to give up your life. Kedichsi b'chol nafshecha. Afilu hu notel es nafshecha. Aval hachmir aleyem yoser mimisa. But something worse than death, loha yuchayavim, you're not obligated to suffer torture. V'yafe pirish, and I like that commentary. Umashe hikshalav Rabbeinu Tam Rabbi Akiva. What do you do with Rabbi Akiva's question, with Tosus' question from Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva is willing to endure torture? So he says, no, that's not analogous. Why? So third line at the period, nearly, delo kasha, that's not a question. Midi de hasam haka sheyesh ba kitzva hava. That wasn't a case of torture. That was torture over a short time. He was dying, and they were combing his flesh to give him a torturous death. But that wasn't going to be long-term torture. So the Gemara says, so the way the Shita Mekubetzes understands the distinction, that long-term torture is worse than death, and you're not obligated to give up your life. Rabbi Akiva's case, where he did give up his life, was short-term. He was dying anyway. Okay? So you have this dispute here whether or not torture is going to be worse than death in cases of Yehari Vayavar. Now to Billy's point. What do you do with the fact that Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah actually did give up their life now, if it wasn't Avodah Zarah according to Tosfos? Oh. What? Oh. But you want to say it was voluntary. It was Midas Chasidus, right? It was supererogatory. They didn't have to do it. But what about the Rambam? The Rambam said anybody who gives up their life when you're not supposed to, right? That's the antithesis of Kiddush Hashem. If you're not, you violate this prohibition of Aches Dimchem Lenafsho Seichem. You're not allowed to kill yourself. Okay. So look at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah of Zayin and Beis. V'im Ratzah, top of page 4. V'im Ratzah L'Hachmir Al Atzmo. And if somebody wanted to be Machmir, to be more stringent, Afilu Bishar Mitzvos, even in the rest of the 610 Mitzvos, Rashai, he's allowed to. He's allowed to give up his life. Okay, and he quotes this vague Yushalmi. It's not clear. Everyone else understands Yushalmi differently. But Tosus in Sanhedrin suggests, Tosus in Avodah Zarah suggests that you're allowed to voluntarily give up your life.
Giving up your life is more.
Yeah, he thinks that's machmir.
That's more machmir.
Right, the Rambam thinks that's being lenient. Yeah. Right, the Rambam thinks that's almost a chil Hashem.
It's a chil Hashem.
Right. Tosus thinks no, that's supererogatory. That's above and beyond even. That's like the best. We'll see. Yeah, there's a historical point here also. There's a historical point here also, which I'm going to discuss at Shal Shudis. But Tosfos are writing in the aftermath of the Crusades.
Didn't you say earlier that giving up your life improperly is...
Yeah. Oh, it's a big problem. It's a violation of this prohibition of murder. Oh.
Would we say the people that killed themselves on Masada because they were afraid of torture or afraid of that?
Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see that in Halacha, that generally we say, Ma'abid Asma Da, somebody takes his own life. So there's no avelos even. Okay, you're not supposed to shit avelos because the person committed a crime. You're not supposed to bury him in the normal cemetery. Okay, so let's read a little more. The Gemara in Psachim says the following: Psachim nun gimel amibes ibayluhu todos ish romi gavar rabahava. Sorry, you could skip that. End of the first line. Od zu tarash darash todos ish romi made the following drasha. Ma ro Hanani Mishael v'Azariah shemasru atzman al kiddush Hashem. Why did Hanani Mishael and Azariah throw themselves into the kivshan ha'esh, into the furnace? Nasu kal v'chomer ba'atzman mitzvardeim. They looked to the story of Shemos, of the ten makos, and they had a kal v'chomer. U'matzvardeim she'ein mitzuvin al kiddush Hashem. Just like the frogs who are not commanded to sacrifice their lives for Hashem. K'sivbehu bo'u v'olu b'veisecho v'tanurecho misharosecho. It says the frogs went into the ovens. Emasai misharos mitzuyos etzol tanur. It says they were in the bread. When is the bread found in the oven? Hava omer b'shasha tanur cham. Bread's only in the oven when the oven's heated. The frogs went into the oven when it was heated. So they gave up their lives for Hashem. They're not commanded. Anush mitzuvma kedushas Hashem. Halachas kam v'kama. All the more so, we Jews were commanding kedushas Hashem.
It's a fairy tale. What are we supposed
to do? It's a fairy tale. 100%. Normally you have an Agada to Gemara. An Agada to Gemara, it's a homily. It's not meant to be normative, and usually you don't. The Gonim already say, and the Ramban says, you don't take Agada to Gemara seriously. Look, however, at Tosos on the spot. Ma ro Hanani Mishael v'Azariah. Rashi says, what did they see to give up their life? So Rashi just says, Ma ro shalo darshu v'chai behem v'lo shiyamus behem. Why didn't they say that generally you're supposed to live by the mitzvos? Tosa says that's a ridiculous pshat. He doesn't like Rashi's interpretation. The kashet, haparhes yahava. That was a case of public, and in public, you're always supposed to give up your life. So why do you need this special kal v'chomer from the tzvardeya to justify giving up your life if that's the normal halacha? That's Tosa's question. So Tosa says, I have the answer. What I said in Ksuvis, end of the second line, mefarish abeinu tam, ditzelam zesh, asa nevuchanetzar lav avodah zarah hava. This wasn't an avodah zarah, like Tosa said in Ksuvis. It wasn't really avodah zarah. So why did they give up their lives? So for a non-Avodah Zarah case, they had this special kal v'chomer from the frogs. That's the way Tosas learns. Okay?
How does that justify it?
So they had this special inference from the case of the frogs. What do you do about the homily? Right? What do you do that the Gemara is not supposed to be taken seriously? Right? Okay. That's one problem. It's a large reach. Okay, let's look at another problem here in the Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos tells the following story as well. The Gemara says, we have 5 more minutes? 5 more minutes? Yeah? All right. Mitch, 5 more minutes?
Yeah.
All right. You're in charge. Okay, so Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, second to last source on page 4. Kol mitzvah shemasru Yisrael atman aleim lemisa b'shas gezeres hamachos. Any mitzvah which the Jews sacrifice themselves over on times of persecution, kegon avodas kochav mumila, like idolatry and mila, adayin hi muchzak es biyadam. Those are the mitzvahs that we're still good about today. The kol mitzvah shelo masru Yisrael atman lemisa b'shas gezeres hamachos, and any mitzvah which we were lenient about, so kegon tefillin, like the mitzvah of tefillin, adayin hi merufa biyadam. We're still not so good at performing those mitzvahs. Okay. So the Gemara says, how do we know that tefillin was not taken seriously in times of persecution? The Amar Rabbi Yanai, tefillin tzrichin guf, naki kalisha bal kanafayim. Anybody who wants to wear tefillin, this is part of the whole controversy in all the day schools, anybody who wants to wear tefillin needs a clean body. Maihi, what does it mean, a clean body? Amar Rabbi Yishlo yafiach behem, shouldn't flatulate. Rava Amar Shlo yishin behem, you shouldn't fall asleep when you're wearing tefillin. So the Gemara says, fine. Why did they call this guy Elisha bal kanafayim? Why did they call this guy Elisha a man of wings? Right? Shepam achas, one time, Gazar Malchus Arasha Gezer al Yisrael, the evil kingdom decreed against the Jews, Shekol haminiach tefillin al rosho yikru es mocho. Anybody who wears tefillin, they're going to cut out his brain. V'haya Elisha miniach tefillin. Elisha insisted on wearing tefillin, and not only that, Yatzel Lashuk. He walked outside with his tefillin. Ra'uhu kastor echad, an officer saw him, Ratz milafana v'ratz acharav, he started chasing him down the road, Kivan shehigialav, natla miroshan v'achsam biyado, he took the tefillin off, quickly held him in his hand, Amarlo Mabiyatcha, he says, what did you have on your head? Amarlo Kanfeyona. He said, I had the wings of a bird. A miracle happened, he opened up his hand, and instead of tefillin, there were wings of a bird. Fine. That's the story in the Gemara. So the Gemara is bringing this as a proof that tefillin was not taken seriously in the times of earlier generations. What's the proof? How does it show that tefillin wasn't taken seriously? So the Rashbam says, I don't have it here, but Tosas quotes the Rashbam, that because he should have kept his tefillin on his head when the guy came to him. Should have kept his tefillin on the head. So the fact that he took his tefillin off shows you that they didn't take tefillin very seriously in those days. Meaning, he should have given up his life for the mitzvah of tefillin. The Ramban's very not happy with this. Because the Ramban says, even if you want to say with respect to a negative commandment that you're supposed to give up your life rather than violate it, there's no aveira on not putting on tefillin. You're just not fulfilling a positive commandment. So how could you say that you have an obligation to go ahead and put on tefillin in front of this decree and give up your life for a mitzvah which you didn't have to do in the first place? So the Ramban suggests that once again it was supererogatory. True, he didn't have to give up his life, but it was the appropriate thing to do in the circumstance. If you want to see the Ramban inside. What? Yeah, it's a kind of a Kiddush Hashem. It's on the top of page 5. So you see, V'rashai Hayasavar, it's the top of page 5. Hayasavar, he thought, Shelo Yiruhu Adam. Either he thought nobody would see him, or Shehaya Moser Atzma Lemisa, he willingly was willing to give up his life, Shelo Levato Me'olav Malchus Shemayim, so that he wouldn't be missing Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim even for a minute. V'rashai Hu Bekach, and he's allowed to give up his life. V'eino Kimischaya Benafsho. Notice, he's countering the Rambam. He's not considered liable for death. Afal pisha amru yivatu val yehareg, even though they said that generally you're supposed to violate the mitzvah. Why? Shekol mitzvah shehechziku b'yisrael b'shas hashmad, noltan alav schar harbe, v'dayin muhzak es piyadam. Because any mitzvah that you're willing to sacrifice your life for, so you get extra schar, and it's like a special mitzvah. Okay? That's directly contrary to the Rambam. So you have this fundamental machlokas here. Are you willing to give up your life for a mitzvah where you're not obligated to? Rambam says it's bad. Tosos and the Ramban say it's okay. It's okay, and that's even better. Okay, so it's the antipodes here of the... Now, this raises two more questions. Okay, and here's where the prelude to Shabbos comes. There's a difference between saying that I'm going to put myself into a situation where I'm going to do a mitzvah which I don't have to, and now the non-Jew is going to come and kill me for it. I'm going to put on tefillin, and I'm voluntarily giving up my life. That's the machlokas between the Rambam and Tosfos. There's a closer question. Am I willingly able to take my life rather than face the conversion to another religion? In one case, you're absolutely passive. You've simply created this scenario where he's going to kill you. So you're voluntarily giving up your life. Another case is where you're taking your life, which is much stronger. Because when you're taking your life, then you have to grapple with aches timchem lenafsho seichem edrosh. When you take your own life by some action that you do, so that's kind of self-murder. In these cases which we just discussed, you could say, I'm not murdering myself, I'm putting myself into a situation where now I'm going to be forced to do Kiddush Hashem. What about a case where you're going to take your own life? So Tosos over here discusses this case. I'll just read you the Gemara in Gittin. Skip to the second to last source. This is also an Agada to Gemara. The Gemara probably wasn't meant to be normative. Tana, second to last source. Maisa bedalad meos yuladim is a story with 400 children, story in Gemara and Gittin. Yuladim v'yuladim, 400 children. Shenishbu l'kalam. They were captured to be either be raped. Hergishu ba'atzman. They realized what they were being captured for. Lemahin mispakshin. They realized why they were captured. Amru, they said. Im anu tovim b'yam. Anu ba'an l'chay olam haba. If we take our own lives, will we go into olam haba? So Darash Lohena Gadol Sheben, so the oldest person in the group, so he read some pasuk, which implied that they should. Okay, Amar Hashem, Mibashen Eshiv, Eshiv Mim Tzulos Yam. Hashem says, I'll save you, I'll take you from the depths of the sea. Right, so you see that this was meant for them, because they're in the middle of the sea. So the Gemara goes on to say, Mibain Shine Aryeh Eshiv Mim Tzulos Yam, Elu Tovim Bayam, people who drown in the river will be saved. Kivan Sheshamu Yilados Kach. Once the girls heard this, what did they do? Kaftzu Kulon V'Nafalus Ochayam. They jumped overboard into the river. Nasu Yiladim, once the male children saw what the girls did, so they said Kavachomer, and then Ma halalu shedarkan lekach kach, anu she'in darkein lekach alachas kam v'kama. These girls, it's unclear what halalu lekach is, but they didn't have to do this. Presumably this is, they're working off the same notion that tells us that women aren't obligated to give up their lives in the face of relations. So if they weren't obligated to and they gave up their lives, we of course have to. So Afim Kaftu Sochayam. And they jumped into the river. So this is a nice Gemara. It's a Gemara in Gittin, very moving. But I would have said it's a nice story. You can't infer from a Gemara like this that you have a heter, you have a rationale to give up to take your own life in cases of where you're worried that something down the line is gonna happen. Okay? So the question is, how does this all come about? There's a parallel question, an even deeper question, comes up in the Crusades. The Crusaders were coming to a town. A father and a family are sitting in the town. They didn't want to convert. So the guy wants to take his life. That's this question. Can you infer from the Gemara in Gittin? Can you infer from Hanani Mishael Vazaria? What about can they slaughter their own children? Is that going to be justified by any stretch of the imagination? You want to say that you could take your own life. But to extend it now to say that you could kill your children to prevent them from converting over to another religion? That's far more controversial. That's not even a question of taking your life. That's a question of murder. So here you have a fascinating tshuva of the Maharam. And this is what I'm going to deal with Shabbos. I'll just read you the introduction. Yehudi echad shal es Maharam sheyichya. A Jew asked the Maharam Rutenberg. He was the big posek in Germany. Im tzarech kapara. Does he have to do tshuva? Al sheshachad es ishto. He slaughtered his wife. V'dalid banav. And his four children. B'yom hereg rab b'kumflinch ir hadamim. During the day of the crusade in this town in Germany. Kikach b'kshuhu. Because his family requested that he kill them. Ki yotza haketzef milifne Hashem, v'hischilu ha'oivim laharog b'nei elchoy ha'ne'eragim al-kiddush Hashem. Because the crusader started killing half the town. So the family asked that he kill them. So he killed them. V'gam hu rotza laharog es atzmo b'misasam. He also wanted to take his own life, so he slaughtered his wife and his family. He was about to take his own life. Ela she'hitzilu Hashem la'idei goyim. By the time it came around for him to take his own life, the crusade already was over. They wouldn't even have come to his home. So he slaughtered his whole family. He realized he didn't have to. The question that the Maharam has asked is, does the guy have to do tshuva? That's the question. Okay, so to hear the answer for the Maharam, you're going to have to come to Shalosh Shittos on Shabbos, or we'll talk about it some other time. That's the big question. Okay.